usually when I first meet with like a mindset coaching client, I can ask them like, you know, defined mental toughness for me. Oftentimes it's pushing through anything and everything. There's like a healthy mental toughness and then there's an unhealthy mental toughness. And it's really understanding the difference between the two.
That was Janelle Braid, and this is episode 148 of the Inspired Souls podcast. Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm a roadrunner.
And I'm Kim, and I'm a trail runner. Welcome to our podcast, where we bring the communities of trail and road running together and explore the parallels between running and life. Janelle Braid is a running and mindset coach from Calgary, Alberta. She founded her business Motivated in Motion when she became aware of the transformative impact running had on her own life, both physically and personally. Recognizing the immense value it brought, she aspires to share this gift with fellow runners. She firmly believes that anyone, regardless of their pace, can embrace the joy of running and accomplish their aspirations with the right motivation and unwavering determination. Her mission is to empower runners of all levels to achieve their goals while nurturing a resilient athletic mindset. In this episode, Janelle tells us about her running experience and explores the topics of mental health, well-being, resilience, and the power of mental preparation as part of your run training. If you're looking to level up both your running and your life, this episode is for you. Hi, Janelle. Welcome to the Inspired Souls podcast. We're happy to have you with us this evening.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk with you guys today.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one. And a topic that Carolyn and I love to chat about is the mental game and the mindset part of running. And you sound like the perfect person to discuss this topic with us. Before we get into details with regards to topic, why don't you give us a little bit of information just about yourself so our listeners can kind of understand who you are and where you're coming to us from?
Sure. So I'm Janelle Braid, and I live in Calgary, Alberta with my husband, Kyle, and my little dog, Zoe. I'm an avid runner, obviously. Before becoming a running coach, I was working in the learning and development industry. And when I wasn't at my computer, I was either in the mountains or on the pathways. You pretty much found me just being active all the time.
Okay, so you mentioned I'm an avid runner, obviously. Well, obviously, but how, you know, to give us a little bit of the backstory on how you developed your passion for running. How did that all start?
Yeah, so I pretty much have been running since I was little. I mean, I know I have this photo that my mom took of me at my first cross-country race, and gosh, I was probably only like 3 feet tall. I'm not much taller now, but I was small and I loved it and I thought it was the greatest. I was no good at it, but I thought, hey, this is cool. And then when I was 16, I decided I wanted to do a race. I was like, this is cool. There's a local race. And so I did my first race, and it was a quarter marathon, which I thought was pretty funny. I mean, at the time, I didn't know any different. So I was like, I've never heard of quarter marathon. After I ran that race, I mean, it gave me such an experience of what racing is like and that running environment that I was like, one day I'm going to run a half marathon. And now I couldn't even tell you how many half marathons I ran, but I clearly caught that bug. And it was probably about after university that I really got into running. And I pretty much was signing up for like local 5Ks, 10Ks, like every other weekend, much to my husband's dismay. Because of course, if I sign up, I'm bringing him with me.
Right. That's awesome.
Yeah. So then, you know, I just kind of just loved the racing environment and just like going for it. And whether, you know, I was going for a PB or not, I didn't really understand all that back then. But I was like, this is fun. I just love running. And yeah, eventually it obviously became a little bit more. And I really wanted to like focus on goals. And that became when I ran my first marathon that I was like, I need a coach. Like, I don't know how to run a marathon. Like, this is crazy talk. And then I did it. And then I was like, okay, I'm hooked on this. Like, I'm going to be doing races like every year. Like, but first, then it came like a serious thing. Like I really wanted to work on improving. I'm competitive.
Performing, not just competing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It was more about the time goals. And for a while, it was actually just about beating my husband's times because naturally he was just fitter than me, or not fitter. He was just faster than me, despite how hard I worked. And so it became my goal to beat him in every distance, which, you know, I'll just pat myself on the back that is what I've done now. But
awesome.
Good for you.
Well, but let me, it just became really fun.
Yeah. Like, so let me just back up for a minute. So you at 16 years old, that's when you did the quarter marathon?
Yeah, that was my first one.
And you hadn't run like track or anything like that leading up to it. Like that's a pretty long way. Like if I'm doing the math right, that's, I've never heard it called a quarter marathon,
yeah,
by the
10.5.
way. Right. But we had this race where I used to live and it was, they called it like the half of a half, right? So okay, same thing, right?
Yeah,
it's a quarter,
yeah,
but exactly. I've never just thought of it like a quarter of a marathon before, but I've always thought of it as a half of a half. But for somebody to just pick up at 16 years old and then run 10.55K, like that's pretty far. So what was it, do you think, that you loved about long distances in particular and wanting to then do a whole bunch of halves and then finally a marathon?
So it's funny. I don't know if I really ever thought about like 10K even being like a long distance. And I don't know why. It just kind of was just like, I just loved running. And this was like back before, you know, I had a Garmin and all that kind of stuff. And like before the days of like me using Strava, I would make my dad go out and drive a route that I wanted to run so that he could tell me how far I ran.
I used to do that too.
Back in the day.
We're really dating ourselves now, ladies.
Yeah.
But it was just like when I'd come home and I'd be like, oh, that's so cool. I ran how far? Like it was just like really cool. And it was like such an achievement that like I did that on my two own feet. Like that's crazy talk. But it was just, I can't even really put into words like why I picked running kind of thing. Like I've never liked cycling. I'm a terrible swimmer. And I have a fear of drowning. So like, let's not go there. But running just seemed like the sport for me. Like I played soccer like since I was like 7 maybe or younger. And it was like, that was my running. Right. And I loved it, but it was only like really short spurts and just kind of building that team atmosphere. Even from that, like I actually created my first or my high school's first girls soccer team. They only had a boys one and I didn't have a girls one. So I pushed and I was like, we need a girls team. Like, I love this. Why don't
Good
we have
for
one?
You.
So that became kind of, that was kind of what I went from soccer to long distance running somehow. But
And then you said that you knew, you had enough self-awareness to know, like, I don't know what I'm doing in the marathon. I need a coach.
Yeah.
So did you say you got, that's when you first hired a coach is to help you with the marathon? Tell us about that experience.
Yeah. So I was pretty like overwhelmed. Like, I ran a half marathon and I don't know how many I'd ran by then, but I was like, my goal for this half marathon is to finish and feel like I could continue. And I was like, I finished, wasn't my best time or anything, but that, because that wasn't my goal. And I knew that. And then I think it was like 2 days later, I was having wine with my family and I just said, oh, I did it. And they were like, what? And I was like, I signed up. I'm signing up for a marathon. And I just was like so nervous in the moment that I was like, I don't know what I've got myself into. So I was like, yeah, I need some professional help to get there. Like I didn't know how to build up my mileage past the half marathon. I was like, what does this even mean? Like, I don't even think I understood fueling at the time.
Like, well, I was probably recognize that, right? Like a lot of people don't recognize that. It's not just twice as much to do a marathon. It's more than that, right? It's the time, it's the training, it's the, you can't cut corners in order to even finish. And so which marathon did you sign up for and how long ago was this to give us some perspective?
So it was the Vancouver Marathon,
the
May one, the BMO, and it was in 2019.
Oh, okay. So 4 years ago. Okay.
Yeah. And it was the most miserable experience I've ever had running a race. Like, I'm not even joking. I said I hated my husband, my like family. I hated my coach. Like I was probably all at 32 kilometer. I hated the world. And then by the end, I said, I'm never running again.
And I just was 24 hours later.
Oh, it definitely
using your credit cards.
the Calgary Marathon was going to be, I think, 3 weeks later, and I was already texting my coach, being like, "Can I do another one?" And it was like, "What happened in those last few weeks?" Like, and he talked to me. We said I could do it, but he was like, "You're not going for a better time." And I was like, "Well, then I'm not doing it." So I'm glad I didn't. I probably would have broke myself, but.
Well, so I think we've got that was a terrible experience, but tell us about some of your favorite running experiences.
Yeah.
Did you ever come back and have a really great marathon?
Well, so my next marathon was last year in May. And I mean, I crushed it in terms of time wise, but it was the most miserable day ever. It was pouring rain, so cold, so windy. It was in Ontario and the lake was splashing all the runners. So it wasn't very fun in that sense, but I felt super accomplished that time. So I did walk away saying I'm going to keep running. So there was at least that.
So there's a mindset lesson and example here that we'll unpack a little later in the episode. But tell us, were there any days that were just blissful for you?
Yes, definitely. Otherwise, I don't know if I'd still be running. It's just I have something to pick with a bug to pick with the marathon. But the marathon, half marathons are my favorite. And it was recently I paced the Calgary Half Marathon, and it was probably the best experience I've ever had running, like, because it wasn't about me. It wasn't about my goal. It was like, here's the time I have to hit. And it was all about just like cheering people on. And I got to a point where, I don't know, we were probably about 16 kilometers in. And I said, if anyone finds me annoying, run faster. Because I was perfect. Constantly cheering them on. And it was really such a cool experience. Like the amount of people that came up to me afterwards and like, can I get a photo with you? You made me hit my goal. And it was just like, such a rewarding experience that kind of made me like fall in love with running again, kind of thing. Like I had some struggles that, I mean, we can talk about, but with my running, and that this really just kind of brought that joy back. It was just so fulfilling.
Now you had people with you at the end. It was funny. I was just watching a marathon and like some of the pace bunnies came in like completely solo. Well, like, I hope everyone's ahead of them and just crushed it and had an amazing day.
It was kind of funny. I was a little bit too fast because usually the course runs long on my watch. Mm-hmm. So I ended up being like, oh no, I'm a little bit fast. So I probably the last 100 meters I danced my way in.
Nice. So, so you could come in like right on the dot. Yeah,
exactly. And they all passed me. So it was the video like of the finish line is pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's an interesting thing you say about pacing, because we've heard this before and I have felt this myself with pacing, is that there is something so awesome about having it not be about you, like being able to help other people and bring them along. So is that something that you want to keep continuing on doing? Okay. Tell us more about that.
I've actually I did a bunch of pacing for the virtual races that happened during the pandemic. And that's kind of what got me kind of like, I really want to do this in like an official race setting, like with a bigger group, not just pacing one person kind of thing.
Yeah. And
it's kind of nice because like with a specific time goal, you don't have to worry about like not hitting the time goal for them. Right. That's on them, but it's like, you just have that one time. Whereas when you're pacing one individual and it's like, oh, I want to hit this time. And if they can't do it, you kind of feel that sense of like remorse at the end too. Cause you're like, I was with you. You feel like it was you who didn't get the goal.
Right. So, I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah, I've actually never thought about it like that either. I was
you take on their feelings for sure.
And you do. And this is one area that trail and road running, I think, do have a significant similarity. Pacing looks different in each of the styles of running, but you know, back to just how rewarding it is. I think I paced four times as much as I actually raced last year. Like I could be a professional pacer.
I know that's what I say too now. I'm like, I don't want to race. I just want to pace. It's so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun. And it really does remind you of why we're all out there. I love how you said it just refreshes your desire and your joy of running.
Yeah.
So we invited you on this podcast to talk about mindset. You are a mindset coach. You know, when did you discover the power of mindset as it relates to running? Was this something that you always kind of intrinsically knew and utilized, or was there an evolution in your awareness that mindset was a significant factor?
So I don't think I really put two and two together for a lot of the time that I was running. You know, when I really got into like the marathons and actually trying to get PBs, that's when I started to realize like, okay, I do need to work on my mental game. Like I need to get through those tough moments because ultimately they happen during every race. But it got to a point where it was like, okay, no, I can withstand the physical pain that of like racing. It was more the thoughts that I was saying, like my internal self-talk, that was actually inhibiting me. And so it was kind of interesting, like not really realizing it until I actually dealt with anxiety and depression myself, that, you know, I struggled with running. Running actually became a problem for me, where I had put so much pressure in on my performance that I ended up having anxiety attacks while I was running. And, you know, I went from running a marathon to 2 months later, not even able to run 3K without an anxiety attack. So it became really eye-opening that, you know, how I talk about myself and how, you know, and it goes for anyone. Like, you know, the way you talk about the run that's going to happen, the way you're talking to yourself while the run's happening, and then what you say after the run has happened. So it's really interesting because, you know, you can be sitting there, you're tying your shoes up and you're just like, I'm dreading this. I'm going to have an anxiety attack, or it's going to be hard, or the weather is miserable. And then you're out there and you start saying like, this is so hard. I can't believe my heart rate, or I'm not hitting the paces I want. And then you finish and you're like, well, that was crap. Like, I don't want to do that again. Like, I suck. Right. And so it kind of like, that's how I would talk to myself. And I was like, I realized like, okay, you know what? Like, that's not healthy. Like, of course I'm going to suck if I tell myself I suck. Like, it's not a healthy mindset. So really realizing and kind of giving myself grace. And it's exactly what I tell my clients, like, give yourself grace. You know, not every run's going to be amazing, but we can learn something from every run. So it's just important to really be mindful and almost stay present in what's happening and what you're saying to yourself and how your body's feeling, and just accepting it, because you can't necessarily, you know, if, you know, your quad seizes up, right? You can't change that in the moment. It's how you get through it in that moment that will make or break your run.
I think it's so interesting because most of us take up running, or we're drawn to running because we think of the health benefits, right? The physical health, the mental health, but what you're speaking to. And I think this is quite common for many, many runners. I can for sure say in the road running community that what drew us there is like, oh, this is fun, or I did better than I thought. And you ride that wave for a little while until you don't anymore. And then it's like, then you realize like, these thoughts are going on. Like, you may not even realize that they're going on before, during, after, like you just talked about, until something really gets your attention, like a panic attack or an anxiety attack. So was there like a rock bottom moment for you? Like, was it that you couldn't run 3K without having a panic attack, or was there something else? Like, talk to us about like what really woke you up to it.
Yeah. So it was actually interesting. Like, I was trying everything I could before. Like, I actually went on a leave from my job, and because everything just like my anxiety and depression got so bad. And, but I would go for a run, and I remember doing a speed workout, and right from the get go, my chest was so tight. And I thought, oh man, my heart rate doesn't seem too crazy. And then it would spike. And I was like, okay, I can't do this. And I got to a point where I found a curb and I sat down and I just bawled. Like, it was the worst feeling, but I didn't understand it either. I just thought, well, I just had a stressful day at work or whatever it was. Like, I didn't really understand what was going on until I saw an acupuncturist. And that, I was trying to make myself happy by doing anything I possibly could. And she said, well, that's anxiety. And I was like, oh, I was like, well, I've had this before, but I didn't know. Like, I thought, well, it's just a bad running day. Right. But really learning to listen to my body, like, runners are very in tune with their body for sure. But that comes more of like a physical, like, my IT band is hurting, or like, you know, it's not necessarily about like, why is my chest tight? Like, why can't I breathe today? Like, it's actually probably, you have to think about what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, we've all had those runs where our heart rate seems out of whack and we're like, my effort level is not matching my heart rate level. And why does this feel so hard today? And when I personally have really checked in on those days, it's usually the days I'm in sympathetic overdrive, massive fight or flight. It's been stressful. Exactly. I'm trying to squeeze a run in between 57 other things that day. And it's like, well, no wonder you're not feeling relaxed and zen like right now, right?
Exactly. I also found like, I mean, my body was giving me all the signs. I just wasn't listening, right? Like, I was like, oh, it's just a sprained ankle. Oh, it's just this, it's that. And like, I was injured, like, not even gonna lie, like every second week. And it was like, what the heck? Like, okay, I sprained my ankle twice within a month. I pulled my quad. I had 2 tibial stress fractures. It was like, it was not even funny. Like, but I refused to listen.
When the body says no.
I just refused to listen. I was just like, no, I'm going to run. I'm a runner. Like, I almost put too much pressure on that. Like, I just ran a marathon and I was like, now I need to PB my half marathon. Like, I set myself this goal to PB all the distances that year. And I was like, and my body said, no, like, this isn't happening. Right. Be realistic. And so, you know, in a weird way, life has this like twisted sense of humor that if you're not going to listen, it's going to force you to listen. And
absolutely,
hence these panic attacks, right? It was just like, you're not going to listen. Well, guess what? You're sitting on the curb and you're going to cry. Like,
yeah, yeah.
We're going to bring it right in front of you.
Yeah. And I love that too, because I always say the universe will whisper and then it will roar, right? Like if we don't listen when it gives you like the tap on the shoulder, then it'll give you like the universal 2x4 to wake you the hell
smack
up.
In the face.
Yeah. How come runners tend to always be the type of people that need that? Like
you've
got to be broken right down to nothing before I listen. Right?
Well, my own personal theory is that because pushing through in a sense like is part of the sport.
We're
really good at it, right? And so it does, we tend to get maybe a little bit further down with it than maybe somebody else would.
It's interesting. Usually when I first meet with like a mindset coaching client, I can ask them like, you know, defined mental toughness for me. And everyone's definition is different, but oftentimes it's pushing through anything and everything. And you know, it's funny, I actually was asking my husband this because he was hurting on our trail run the other day and he wasn't having any of the, you know, coach wife kind of attitude. So he was just like, shut up, Janelle, until he had gotten home. And I was like, hey, define mental toughness. And he's like, oh, it's just being tough and it's pushing through no matter what. And I was like, okay, but does that mean pushing through an injury to you? And he goes, yeah, like if it hurts, that probably means I can keep pushing. And so it really, there's like a healthy mental toughness and then there's an unhealthy mental toughness. And it's really understanding the difference between the two and setting those boundaries for yourself. Like, if I have like a running client who's just like, you know, they skipped a workout because life was too busy. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm glad you recognize that, you know, it probably wouldn't have helped you to run today. Like, if you know that, I'm proud of you for recognizing what you can handle on your plate that day. It doesn't matter. And it's the same, like, you know, client wakes up sick and they realize, oh, I can't run a race today because I'm sick. And it's like, well, I'm glad you decided to pull out because you probably would have done more harm than any PB would have ever made you feel. Like, it's just not worth it.
You probably would not have PB'd.
No, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. We all think we can push through anything, but we can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, isn't it the Do Hard Things by Steve Magnus, where he really talks about, I don't know if you've read that book, Janelle, but that exact thing, that definition of toughness and how we've historically defined it, but what not just common understanding, but research has proven actually how defines, you know, what truly being tough is. And is that even something we should want? Like, is it something we should aspire to?
And I think, again, it just depends on your own definition, right? Like if it means, because sometimes being mentally tough just means you're showing up to doing your workouts. Like I'm setting an example for my kid, no matter what, but it's also like, you're also setting an example for your kid. If you're running on an injured, you know, on an injury. Yeah. Yeah. So your kid's going to learn that too.
Like for experienced runners, again, we've talked about this. Sometimes stopping and dropping out or not doing that run is way harder. It takes more toughness to do that than it does to just keep pushing through.
Exactly.
So you've talked about, you know, you have an extensive running background. You had this period of self-discovery about, you know, mindset is definitely a factor you can't ignore. It's yelling at you like, this is something that's important and I can't ignore this. How did you then move into, you know, opening your own company and starting your own business, Motivated in Motion? I know you are a USCA trained running coach. You know, just talk to us about how you moved from a moment of self-awareness to, I actually want to help others and create a way to impact more people than just myself with this.
Yeah. So it was actually, it's interesting. Like I've always kind of wanted to be a running coach, like for years. Like I think once I met my first run coach and then I was kind of making running plans for family and like, it was really fun, but I never really took it seriously. Never thought I would actually go and do it. And, you know, like I said, life kind of throws things at you. And when I was, you know, kind of at my worst, and all I could think of was, I don't want to go back to my job. Like, it makes me miserable. It was making me physically, mentally ill. And I just realized life is too short to be miserable. And so I really kind of dug into like what kind of makes me happy. And it was really that, like, it's kind of funny. My Instagram account is Motivated Misses. And it's because like I realized that people found it motivating, like me posting about my runs and my workouts. And so it really, that kind of helped me realize like, okay, I like motivating people. I really like helping people you know, when people message me and like, hey, I'm going to run my first 5K. Do you have any tips? Like, those are the kinds of things I love. And I was like, why not make this my job? Being able to help people on a daily basis is just, and then also throwing in that mindset side of things, having been through it myself, I realized, well, I now have these tools that I've learned myself. And I also know what these, the red flags are, you know, if someone's going to experience kind of what I did. So I want to prevent it. But if it does happen, I want to help coach people through it. Like, I don't want people to have to suffer in silence, basically. There's just more to life. And, you know, I kind of say like running is the catalyst to life and happiness. And, you know, like we don't have to use running. Like if someone just wants to, you know, bike or strength train with me, I'm fine with that. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just happy you're finding movement and passion in it. And if that gives you joy, that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about tools that you learned to help yourself. How did you develop these tools? Like, did you have your own mindset coach or did you get some training on your own? Or like what, how did you reach the point that you felt you had something you could really genuinely share with others with confidence?
So I say it's a bit of both. I mean, through my own personal experiences, you know, dealing with a therapist myself and like, you know, talking to my doctor and she was giving me tools, but I took a mindfulness certification. And I also completed a specialization course in sports psychology. So from there, that really helped me gain some tools and really, but again, I take the information and I wouldn't say all the time that like the education side of things didn't necessarily give me specific tools to help people through certain situations. It's more, you know, if this worked for me, let's try it. Like maybe we can play with that for, you know, someone else. And, you know, maybe what works for me doesn't work for them. And just general, just doing research and just figuring out like, what are some of these ways that we can help people get through these things?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we all have blind spots, right? And that even came up in your own story is that we just kind of hit our head against the wall for many, many times until we realize, oh my goodness, like I need to look at this differently. And so do you find that just given your own background and now the training that you've taken on top of it, that you're almost able to see things that your clients aren't able to see yet in themselves, that you can sort of act as that like beacon and say like, hey, have you ever thought about this? So what kind of people are you helping, and are they coming to you because they want to work on the mental side, or are they like coming to you for run coaching and they just want you to give them the program and then this mental stuff is all value added, I guess, on top of
that? So it's actually a bit of both. Most people, I mean, I would say probably my first at least 5 clients came from just following me on Instagram, and they were just like, that's exciting. I want to be coached by you. So it wasn't even necessarily about the mindset side of things. It was just, I want to be a better runner or whatever it is. But I pretty much work with all kinds of people, from people who are learning to run, postpartum running, all the way to like marathons. So like we have these more experienced runners. And it is interesting that you say, like, do you recognize these things? And it's funny because I have to tailor my messaging sometimes to people when I can tell that maybe they're not going to be so receptive to hearing some of this like mindset or be mindful. Like it sounds just too fluffy for them. So I have to kind of tailor it into their workout almost. Like, okay, you're going to focus on this interval, not the next one. Like we have to, like, I have to talk them through their workouts as opposed to being like, you sit down in a quiet room with your eyes closed. Like they don't like that. Okay. So it's, so it depends on the person. So I really have to get to know the person individually. But if someone comes to me specifically for mindset coaching, we have a whole different intake process. And that really is where I dive into like, you know, what holds you back athletically, or, you know, how do you talk to yourself, you know, in these moments and those kinds of things. And from there I can tailor like the coaching call as well as particular worksheets and workbooks that I give them to help them like take some time, reflect and go through it on their own. But yes, it's such a wide range of people and it's all over the world. Like, I mean, I have a client in Japan, I have some in the States, like it's pretty cool. Like it's all over the world, which just kind of adds to how cool running is and how global it is.
Yes. That's really, you know, it's starting to become more common, but still not common enough, I think, to have coaches that address the mindset part of it. intentionally, mm-hmm. specifically, put it in their title, right? Yep. Like every running coach knows intuitively that that's a part of it. But I think we need to normalize this a little bit more. You can't separate the two. You cannot separate 100%. The physical part from the mental part, right?
It's
maybe
so
there
true.
Will come a day in a few decades where, you know, it's so common, you don't even need to specifically say mindset, right?
Yeah,
but
that's true.
But now it is something that we need to really start, I think, talk about more, normalize more. It's not a sign of weakness that you need to focus on the mindset part. As an ultra runner, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Your body can only get you so far. Your
True.
Mind is definitely a huge, huge part of it. But it's not just a part of completion. It's a part of the experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Having a good experience, not just in a race, but in training and in sustainability as well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go off script a little bit here and ask you a bit about that. So every runner comes to a coach with a goal, usually,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
How do you address the training part and the periodization part and the maybe year over year part to try to build a resilient runner, not just for this race, but for next year and the next year and the next year?
Mm-hmm. So I think I said this earlier, like every run has a purpose and we can learn something from it. So I actually have a sign by my treadmill that says, never a failure, always a lesson. So, you know, if someone is really struggling, they feel like they didn't comply with their training plan for a week or that run was awful. I know I ask them like, okay, well, what was awful? What was good? Like we focus on, you know, what can we learn from it? And like same with races. Like I actually, a common thing I will ask people when they come to me with their goal and it's like, I want to run a sub-2 half marathon. And I'll say, why? Like, what is the purpose of that sub-2 on the clock? Is that going to genuinely give you joy and make you happy? Or in 2 days, are you just gonna be like, now I'm going for 155, right? Like, I want to like really dig deeper to those like intrinsic goals and really understand like, okay, well, what is it that's driving you? It was kind of cool. I had a client who raced this weekend and we talked about this. And at the beginning of the call, she had a time goal. By the end of the call, it was, I want to finish without getting injured. And it was really cool just to see like, and she even said it was the best she's ever felt when she finished a race. And it's like, it's because she focused differently on her mindset. It wasn't about getting to the end and hitting a certain time goal. It was, her goal was totally different. And she actually still really smashed it because she wasn't focused on it. So
yes,
like,
yes.
Yeah. So it's interesting just kind of focusing on things that aren't so outcome oriented. And that's where like, I do challenge clients on that. Like some clients are like, they're all about the data. They're all about, you know, the numbers. And sometimes I'll be like, well, how do you feel? Cause you can't trust data. I mean, you can, but only to a certain extent. So even when I'm building training plans, like, you know, I have some clients who just can take more load than the others. And so it's like, I can't rely on, you know, it's telling like Training Peaks, for example, is telling me that they're overwhelmed, but they're like, now I can go for like another hour. And I'm like, and they don't get injured, right? Like it's learning each person. They're
I'm laughing
you know
because
what I'm talking about.
The other day, my watch told me, you know, congratulations on your, you know, rest today. You're recovering well. And I'm like, I just did an hour hill repeat workout. I worked all day. I drove for 4 hours. This was not a restful day. How are you telling me this is a restful day?
And that's exactly it.
So
that's why,
you're
like,
right. Data, the algorithm.
Like, their watch tells them a certain goal that they can hit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's not worry about what your watch is telling you.
Exactly.
Oftentimes,
yeah.
Garmin is a complete jerk and like tells you you're peaking when you're not, or you're in recovery when you're ready for racing. Like, mm-hmm. So
or you're detraining.
Really,
oh no,
yeah,
you're detraining.
That's
like
detraining.
After a marathon,
yes.
When you're taking your end of the season break, and you're like, what?
Well,
yeah.
This one was
I had detraining before my
Thank
marathon,
you.
And I was like, oh no.
yeah. yeah. Okay, so earlier you touched on sort of the anxiety and depression that you were having and the panic attacks and all of that. Now, I'm just curious if we could pull on that thread just a little bit more. Was there anything more there that kind of led you down this career path, but also like anything more that you sort of bring with you from that experience into your day-to-day running?
Yeah, definitely. So as I mentioned, you know, I had the anxiety attacks and I ended up leaving my job. I actually experienced burnout, and it was interesting when I was taking my certification and, you know, it's talking about the symptoms of burnout. And I was like, tick, tick, tick. I was like, oh no. Like, I didn't realize, I didn't have a name for it, but I was like, oh, I experienced burnout. But it wasn't just in running. It was in my life. And I found that I was taking on too much. Like every other day, it was like a new responsibility, a new task. And on top of that was my running. And it just became so overwhelming. And like, I'd spent the last 3 years really focusing on chasing goals, the time on the clock, kind of like I talked about. Like, you know, I always wanted to do better. I wanted another PB, but it made me really lose sight of why I run. And so that's another part that's really prominent in my coaching, is really diving into why does someone run and what motivates them. So, you know, losing that sight line really made me sit back, do some like thinking internally, really soul searching kind of thing, and find out why do I run. And like I said, that half marathon that I paced really brought that to me, and just really getting an understanding of where my passion is and how it's like helping others. And it's really about like understanding what gives you passion, but also, and understanding that why, but also understanding that over time that can change. So, you know, one day it was, you know, I really want to, you know, prove to myself I can hit this time. It's all about challenging myself. But then, you know, as we progress and grow, we might learn that that might change. And it might even be that running may not be that fulfilling sport for you anymore. And it's learning to accept it. So just like I had to like learn to like step back from my job and, you know, really deal with my own emotions that I wasn't dealing with. Like, it's just like this whole cycle, like there's so many parallels between running and dealing with like anxiety and depression and learning how to cope, basically.
Mm-hmm. So is this something that you encourage people to revisit often then, like, you know, every 6 months or something, like, let's reevaluate. Do you still love running? Like, do you really want this goal? Like, is there an interval of time that you recommend people kind of go back to what goals they're pursuing and why? Or is it, I don't know. Do you understand the question?
Yeah. I wouldn't say that, like, I don't have a specific timeline where I re-ask people. It's more like, I can generally sense, you know, if someone's missing a couple workouts or maybe more than a couple, or, you know, they're getting injured, these kinds of things kind of indicate they're like those like red flags to me. And I'll say like, let's take a step back. Let's focus on those goals again. Why are we doing this? You know, do you still like it? Like it. Is it still giving you like that purpose and that joy that you want? And if not, like, let's talk through it and let's figure out maybe what those next steps might be, or how can we get back there?
Yeah, that's important. You know, I tend to reassess my why yearly when I'm planning my next year, but a year's a long time. Like, your why can change over time and you 100%. Can forget your why. And I think that's really great, I guess, for lack of a better word, to have a coach that is intuitive enough to, you know, bring you back to continually, you know, recenter if the alignment's off, if the red flags are starting to go up. Mm-hmm. Because, and then be honest with yourself. Okay, I identified this as a reason 6 months ago, but it's changed. This is not driving me anymore. I need to let that go. And if we're going to continue on this path, maybe I need to redefine my why, right?
Exactly. And it's easy to get caught up in what others are doing too. I mean, I can speak to that myself. I mean, when I was chasing all these goals, I was in an environment where everybody was always chasing another goal, another race, and like another PB, or they were going a longer distance. And I felt the need to do that too, that I did lose sight of that. Why am I doing this? Like, I'm just signing up for this because I need another goal. Whereas I used to sign up for 10Ks every other weekend just for the sake of running. Like, and so I kind of lost sight of that. Like, I actually became so much more intentional about which races I was going to do because I had to focus on that goal, which is fine. It's that's a great thing for some people, but as long as it doesn't come at like that cost of really losing sight of why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. And now you talked about, I think this is fairly common in the running community. We're all pretty self-motivated and driven. A lot of us are, right? And that we feel so bad when we miss a workout. And so then it's helpful to have that coach saying, it's okay. Like, I'm glad you took the day off because you're sick, or like life is throwing you too many things. So good for you for taking the day off. And now you were just there kind of speaking to the other side of it. If you start to see a pattern of like, here's the goal, but you're not continually not showing up for the goal, then you have that other conversation of like, is this still serving you? Do you even want this anymore? And it sounds like just even as you're kind of giving us examples of how you might bring this up with someone, you sound very loving in your energy, like non-judgmental, and just because it doesn't have to, it's not like we don't have to be drill surgeons as coaches, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I actually had a client, she texted me one day and she's just like, I just couldn't finish the workout. And she goes, I know you put in or you get out what you put in and all this kind of stuff. And I replied back and I was like, do you really think I'm that mean? I was like, I'm never going to say that to you. I was like, I'm proud of you for recognizing that you couldn't finish today and you didn't push past what your limits were that day. Like, and it's funny because I also in my intake form, I ask clients, you know, what kind of coaching do you want? Do you want handholding or tough love or a bit of both? So I usually don't like it when people say they want the tough love, but I can do it. I mean, I do it to my husband. He doesn't get the option. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes people think they want the tough love, but in that moment, like if people are doing the best they can, I really do believe that people are doing the best they can. And if they are not showing up and not showing up and then the coach comes and gives them the tough love, like that can be just one more thing to feel bad about. Yeah. You know, I truly think there's a deeper reason. If you're continually not showing up, it's either like illness, injury, burnout, like you're just on the precipice of one of those, or the goal was never really yours in the first place. It was your best friend or the culture of the group that you're in or something like that. And that can, again, be another opportunity to revisit and say like, okay, what's going on here? Let's zoom out. Let's like talk this through. So, and I think that can be a valuable part of having a coach. Too. Like, again, people think, I just want the plan. Just give me the plan. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. And it's like, well, but coaching is more than that. Like, 100%. Yes, we write the training and that's great. And I love that part of it. But I really am totally here for all the other stuff. Like, give me like the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like, I want to celebrate your wins and I want to actually help you navigate through some of these messier times as well.
Exactly.
Well, and when you do that as a coach, you develop the kind of relationship with your athlete that if they need some tough love, it's going to be well received, right? It's exactly. It's going, you know, there are times where somebody does need to be called on their and you know, but you can only have that land in a way that's productive if you've established that trust and that relationship and that 100%. Knowledge of what the place that person is in. At
exactly.
That point in time.
Like my goal is to get to know the athlete as an individual, not as an athlete first and foremost. I need to understand what makes them tick before I can even really think about building them their training plan.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. So there's so much that I still want to talk about with you here, Janelle. Let's spend a few moments zooming in a little bit on real like examples of strategies of things that you might tell some of your clients. Now I recognize that, you know, everybody is unique, but you mentioned on your website about mental preparation and the transformative power of mental preparation. This is not new. There's lots of been written about this. There's lots of understanding that mental preparation is important, but give us some examples of some strategies that you have used with clients that have really been aha moments for them, that have been like, wow, I did this before an event and it worked.
Yeah. So like you said, it does depend on the individual. Cause you know, there's some people who just, they see the workout, they do the workout, they put it on the shelf, they're done. But there's the other people who, you know, they overanalyze the workout. Am I going to be able to do this? And, you know, I take the time to learn what kind of athlete am I working with here? And it's really like figuring out, okay, so if it's a matter of the long run, like I tend to break down long runs and races a lot more than the average person. I know most people like to break it down like quarters or thirds, but I actually break it down kilometer by kilometer, mile by mile, depending on how the client works. If I know that they get so focused on that outcome goal and all they can think about is getting to the finish line and they're not present. So I'll give them tools. So there's a few different ones, but one can be, you know, staying present in each kilometer, find, you know, person in the race or the view that you're looking at or whatever it is, find one thing every kilometer to focus on, you know, and it can just be like, damn, that girl has really cool hair. Like, it's bright blue, and that's all I want to look at for the next kilometer. Sorry. Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily have to be just in, like, something physically there. Sometimes I say, like, dedicate each kilometer to a person. So someone who you love in your family or your friends, your coach, can be anyone. And you just think about it every kilometer, and you just kind of, you dedicate that kilometer to them. I'm running for my husband. I'm running for my mom. Other ones can be just to think of things you're grateful for. Like, it doesn't, again, it doesn't have to be present. It could just be like, I'm really grateful for my husband making me coffee this morning, or I'm really grateful for my coach who created this tailored plan, or, you know, it could be anything. And I even, so I give that to clients, like, in their training plans even. So it's not necessarily for a specific race. And it's pretty cool because they will say, like, no, I was so focused. Like, normally I would be so focused on how am I going to finish this workout, but they kind of lose themselves in their mind when they start focusing on something totally different. Some of the other things can be like, if you find you're not being present, just counting your footsteps. It's something to bring you back into that present moment where you're not worrying about that next interval, like, or the last interval, like, oh, I tanked that last interval. How am I going to do this again? You're not thinking about it. You're just like going, just focus on being present. And then there's the power of visualization. I mean, I am all for visualizing that finish line. It's just, when do you do it? So I always have like a series of, oh, go ahead.
No, like, please talk about this. I actually wanted to ask you a bit more about this. So I want to hear what you want to say. And then I might have all my questions answered. Go ahead.
Perfect. Okay.
So when do you visualize?
So I actually have a series, like mindfulness activities I give clients, like the 3 weeks leading up to their race. So it has like goal setting, visualizing, I think it's visualizing obstacles. So like that they know, you know, say if it rains on race day, imagine yourself running in the rain and how you're going to get through it. So there's like imagining all these different scenarios. But I think obviously visualizing before the race, like maybe the week of, is great, but I also think you need to be doing it while you're training. Because sometimes, again, you get lost in your thoughts and it almost brings you back to what that goal is going to be. And I think with visualization, it can't just be like imagining the number on the clock. Like, you have to, it's almost like manifesting. I don't know if you guys, I know that gets into that whole like kind of fluffiness, and that's the stuff that some clients don't believe in, but the power of that is really incredible. If you can really put yourself in that position, that point in time, what do you hear? Who is in the crowd? What does the clock say? Like, what
are you smiling?
Exactly. It's funny because, like, I have goosebumps just thinking about it because I'm just imagining crossing a finish line now.
Yeah.
But it's so powerful because if you can see yourself doing it, you can achieve it. And that's all that matters. Like,
So let me ask you a question. So you talk about doing it not just the week before the race, but during your training up to the race at a significant distance from the race. I was just listening to another podcast with a running coach. His name is Joe Yuhan. He's a physical therapist out of the States. And he reminded me of a study, and I've heard this quoted a lot, where they studied somebody doing, like, say you're going for quad strength, right? And you do leg curls with the right side, and it's going to obviously make your right quad stronger. And then you do curls with the left side, and it still makes your right quad stronger. Not as much, but a statistically significant difference. Then you simply visualize doing the curls with your right quad, and there, again, is not as much, but in a statistically significant difference. So visualizing actually creates neuromuscular fatigue. It creates that same feeling like you've done the exercise and an outcome, right? So he translated this, and there's runners who are advocates of this now, where visualizing too close to a race can actually fatigue you and be detrimental. Like, they talk about doing the visualization, but like 3 or 4 days before, just stop, like just shut it off and don't keep exhausting yourself mentally by running over that race over and over and over and over again in your mind. So that's like the flip side of it is, you know, when is the timing of these visualizations the most productive for an athlete? So do you have any further thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'd definitely say, like, you know, if you're looking at your training plan, like I never give more than like 2 to 3 weeks at the most, just because I know most people will look ahead and then they get intimidated and they're like, I'm only at 10K and I got to run 15K. Like they see that and they panic. But so, you know, if you're looking at your training plan, you know, say next week you've got this crazy hill workout, and they think like, I can't do that. But what I say then is like, okay, in that moment when you're doing that workout, now visualize, how are you going to feel when you do that race? This workout serves a purpose for that day. So if you can remind yourself or you can imagine that this is helping you on that day, you're going to get through it. Like, because again, you found that purpose, like it has to have meaning for you.
Right. Okay.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on something that I do with my clients, and I'm putting myself out here and getting very vulnerable here because I'm curious what you might think of this in the context of what we're just talking about. So when I'm prepping somebody for a race, we'll usually have a meeting like 1 or 2 weeks out, and we're like, we talk about the goals and all that stuff, but we also talk about, we run through some, like I ask them, what are 3 things that you're like worried about in the race? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm worried I'm going to have to go to the bathroom. I'm worried that my shoelace is going to come untied or whatever. And then we actually talk through those scenarios. If this happens, then I will do this, this and that and that. And if that happens, then I'll do this and that and that. And obviously you can't think of every single scenario that might happen. And I tell them, we're not doing this to manifest problems in
the race. Exactly. That's important.
We're doing it so that in this calm moment, you can say, okay, if this happens, this and that, that and that. And that way, then if it happens, it's sort of like surgeons in surgery or pilots in the cockpit, where it's just like, I have a checklist and I don't get that panic response if that does happen, because I have an action plan. What are your thoughts on that in terms of visualizing? Did we just visualize that something bad was going to happen?
No, I think you hit it spot on. Like, it's thinking through these scenarios in a rational kind of mindset.
Calm.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, and I give my clients that exercise as well. Like, I make them think about it, like, but I also do imagine, make them kind of visualize it, but not in that like manifesting. Like, I'm not necessarily saying like, feel all the feels, imagine everything. I'm just saying like, you know, if it's raining, are you still running? How do you get through that? Are you going to make it to the finish line if it's raining? Or, you know, you drop a gel, like, well, what can we do to prep for that? Okay, you're going to bring an extra one with you. So you've already thought of this. So I think there is power to it. And I think it's just how we think about these things. It's not, you know, diving deep into it like we do visualizing that finish line. It's, you know, just preparing ourselves so that, you know, on race day, there are no surprises, or at least very little.
And I think everything we're talking about is kind of speaking to like being that resilient runner. Like, if something terrible goes wrong, like, we have tools. We've been here before in our mind and we can just sort of execute. Is there anything else along the resilience topic that you wanted to talk about? Maybe even as it relates to not just training and racing, but maybe different, you know, issues that people go through, like injury or getting older and coming to terms with getting older as an athlete and their times are slowing down. Like, is there anything on that resiliency front that you wanted to
definitely,
any wisdom you wanted to impart on us in that?
I can do my best. So definitely, like, I'm no stranger to injuries. Like, I have pretty much had them all. I'm unfortunate with 10 because I didn't listen to my body and my mind, but there's certain things that I try and figure out with athletes. You know, like I said, like, athletes are very in tune with their body and they understand things, and there's nothing worse than an injured athlete. They're the grumpiest people, the most negative people. They're not getting their outlet. Like, and so it's also figuring out, like,
amen to that.
Yeah. And running can't necessarily be your only outlet. Like, that's something I learned firsthand. Like, when I was dealing like in the deep, dark depths of my anxiety and depression, running, which used to be my outlet, wasn't an outlet anymore. And it was interesting because my first therapist, she said, if that's your outlet, that's going to get old real quick. And I was like, oh shoot, it certainly did. So it's finding, you know, like, you can't make running your entire personality, I guess. I mean, I said that and I became a run coach, but like, you have to have purpose in life, and it can't just be my purpose is to run. Like, it's when people, you know, identify themselves and they say, hi, I'm a runner. You know, it's like, you know, like I'd rather say like, you know, I'm a wife, I'm a dog mom, like all these things before I say I'm a runner. And I have had to learn that myself. So, you know, that when you get injured, it's not such a detrimental like loss, or even as you age, it's not like you're not focused so much on that outcome goal again. It's that reason of why. And it's also looking like, so say for with an injury, it's like looking at the athlete and understanding, you know, what caused the injury. Cause it's not always just like, oh, well, we just need to make a tweak in your gait. It could just be like, oh no, we're pushing you too hard, or you've just got too much on your plate, so let's rearrange your schedule. Or, you know, maybe it's, oh, we need to put speed days after a rest day. Like, oh, okay, that's all we needed. Great. Right. And so again, it comes back to that, like also defining mental toughness. Like, how can we figure that out? And just learning to stay positive. Like, I know it sounds so cliche, like be positive, but it really is like find those positive elements and the positive moments in your day to day and use those as like fuel to help you through your runs and your workouts and any tough situation. Like running is, for me, it's a metaphor for life. Like, it teaches you, like, you know, you go into a race and you know you're going to finish. Maybe not when you're doing necessarily like 100-mile ultras, you don't necessarily know you're going to finish, but I haven't been there yet, so I can't say that. But when I go into a race, I know I'm going to finish. And so that can be the same thing through any tough situation in life. You know, I can get through this. And you know, if it's, you know, a lot of people who have like race anxiety, they have the anxiety is because it's a fear, and it's because it's something that means a lot to them. So it's figuring out, why does it mean a lot to us? And what can we do to kind of like overcome the fear of it? Like, if it's so like crippling, then maybe we need to look at this and reassess that why and the purpose. And I think that goes, you know, goes both hand in hand for injury and for aging. Like, we do have to change the way we train as we age. You know, we need more strength training. We might need less mileage. Like, we have to look at all these things. But ultimately, your mind is what's going to control your adaptability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And adaptability is the number one key skill, I think, to sustainably running.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
not just 100%. In a race, but year over year. Because things are always changing. You're never the same runner when you show up from one race to the next.
Exactly.
The weather's never going to be the same. The course may be the same, but, you know, the field won't be. There'll always be different people ahead of and behind you. And everything's relative. So yeah, being adaptable, that's a big ultra running slogan. Improvise, adapt, overcome.
Yeah, no, it's so true.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, you know, we invite people on our podcast to talk about all sorts of different things really with relation to running. But you've just hit so many of those key things during this interview that really represent why we exist. We call ourselves Inspired Souls for a reason. And we want to talk to you just for a moment about maybe who has inspired you most in your running journey and why.
So it might be a little cliche, but I honestly think it's pretty much like everyone I meet. It could be my friends and family, or it's the stranger who messages me on Instagram saying, I just wanted to tell you, I ran my first 5K and I'm so proud. And like, to me, that is inspiring. And it's just like the running community in general is just such a collaborative and inspiring group of people. And when I set out to start my own running company, I really wanted to create a group of inclusivity. And it doesn't matter if you've been running for 20 years or you're on a run, walk, learn to run kind of coach to 5K program. You're welcome in the running community. We're all here to pick each other up, inspire each other, celebrate the small wins. And it could literally just be lacing up your shoes one day and taking that first step. Like, no matter what, it's all about being a community and inspiring each other and motivating each other and celebrating. Like, that's what gets me like inspired and keeps me running, really.
I love that so much. That's a great answer. Now, just because we've talked about so much, like this topic, mindset, mental toughness, whatever you want to call it, I think really is one of those things that is best learned through your own adversity in a way, right? And so I think we get a lot of wisdom and through our own experience. So if you were to, you know, give a little bit of advice to your younger self, what would you say?
I would actually say that it's okay to not be okay. Having, you know, dealt with my own mental health struggles, my biggest part was I was not okay with not being okay. I was not okay with dealing with, you know, sadness or anger or frustration. Everyone always saw me as, you know, I'm always laughing, I'm fun, I like to make jokes, like, but I always hid that side of myself. And so I think the biggest kind of thing I would probably tell myself is just to be myself in all aspects of my life and in all of my emotions, that in a non-creepy way, like, you don't know who's watching, right? Like you just, how you show up as yourself really sets an example. And I think that that's one of the most important things.
And now, a follow-on question. How does somebody, I think a lot of us hide the whatever perceived messier parts of ourselves. Oh, anger, sadness, like, no one wants to hear about that. Like, how did you come to terms with letting all of the emotions be okay?
So, I mean, it didn't come overnight. So, like, your brain is a muscle, just like your legs or like your quads or your calves or whatever. You have to work them. And it's not something that happens overnight. For me, it literally was taking small steps where, like, I mean, I've been married for over 7 years, and yet I never would show that side of myself to my husband. He knew about it, but I chose to ignore it and pretend like he didn't know, right? So it became, you know, I come home from a run and I am just so angry because, you know, maybe I had a panic attack or I couldn't hit my splits, whatever it was. And it's literally just like, you know, if he says, how was your run? Instead of just being like, fine, and going and having a shower, I'll be like, you know what? It was crap. Like, let me tell you, I hated every minute of that run or whatever it was. I mean, obviously I know I say put your workout away with positive mindset, but like being open about it, like, not being afraid to say that, you know, you had a bad day. And, but it's also a matter of making sure you're surrounding yourself with the right people. Not everyone's going to be receptive to talking about feelings, and that's okay. That's not necessarily a reflection on you. It's a reflection on themselves and them maybe not being ready or open to that yet. But I think that was one of my biggest things, is learning who I can open up to about those feelings. Yeah. It's so important. And you really do need to find that group of people for you that you're okay with it. And I mean, as runners, we're generally pretty open people. You start running more than, you know, for like 2 hours, and you'll tell them your whole life story.
The whole life story. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's truly learning who you can trust with those emotions.
Yeah. And I think too, though, like, when you come home and you've had a bad run and you're honest, that's step number one. Like, it was a crap run. I hated every second of it or whatever. And then I think you can almost use that why, like, thing that you were talking about before, to be like, so you had a bad run. Like, why is that so bad? And you might get down to like, I think this means my fastest days are over, and I'm like, may as well just quit, you know? And it's sort of like another chance to work on the mindset of like, why do you 100%. Think, like, why are we like making, you know, this, magnifying this and making this such a huge thing when bad
is this your income? Is this your, you know,
exactly?
Yeah, that's, see, that's the biggest thing. Just running, like,
and that's why I always say to clients, like, why is that sub 2 the number you want? Because ultimately, the number means nothing.
It's just what it represents, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's, you just have to understand what it means to you. Because you know, if you're just running sub 2 because, you know, your best friend is trying to do it, and it doesn't have the same meaning for
you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, Janelle. Ooh, so much stuff. So many powerful takeaways from this conversation. What's coming up next for you? What do you have on your radar for the running season and the rest of the summer and fall?
Feel like this, Kim. I am embarking on the ultra life.
Woohoo! Which one?
I'm going to be doing the Grizzly 50K in Canmore.
Wow, that's Thanksgiving, right?
Yes. I still have lots of time, thank goodness. Yeah,
actually, that's exciting.
Pretty cool, because during my struggles, my mental struggles, I discovered like I kind of been dabbling in trail running for a couple of years, but not necessarily for races or anything, but I really learned it was my happy place. So it kind of is like, it's my escape. There's no pressure. It's just all about enjoying nature. And so I was like, heck, I said I'd never do an ultra, but now here I am.
Yeah. You know what? You're going to find it's less painful than that marathon.
Oh yeah.
But equally as hard.
To my husband, and, he doesn't believe me.
Yeah, no, it's just a different kind of hard, but no, that's exciting. It'll be, you know, I'd love to loop back with you after you've done that to get you to contrast and compare.
Because,
yeah, that's something we talk about a lot on this podcast. So that's exciting. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. And if people wanted to follow you, it sounds like you have quite an inspiring feed on Insta, or they want to check out your coaching services, where can they find you?
Yeah. So I have two Instagram accounts. My coaching one is motivated.in.motion. And if you want to see more of the funny side of me, it's at motivated.misses. You can also find me on Facebook for Motivated in Motion. And then all the coaching services are also available on my website, www.motivatedinmotion.com.
Okay, awesome. Well, so we'll link to those in the show notes for sure. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on our show and sharing some of your thoughts, your perspective, your tips and tricks, and good luck with the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me on the show. It was a pleasure to get to talk to you and also hear both sides of your training.